Okay. Tonight's subject really is in response to a request that I got to address this subject. I'm just in general saying people have specific things that they would like to hear addressed. Let me know. We can either address it, make it the subject of the shiur if it can fill a subject, or we can address it at the end of the shiur. So consider that a standing offer. But I was asked by someone who happens not to be here tonight, but we'll make sure he's aware that it's available on the website, and the rest of the Olam will get Toyelis out of this. What is Yirat Shamayim, and how do you get it? So the truth is, we can talk about that from now till, well, you won't be home on time for Shabbos, let's put it that way. And I'm not saying which Shabbos. But let's address it, especially since in an earlier shiur we once started addressing Yirat Shamayim, and we did not begin to do it justice because we only addressed one most superficial element of Yirat Shamayim. So, everybody, it's very famous that Yirat Shamayim divides into two parts. What's known as Yiras HaOinish and Yiras HaRimimus. If we'll translate Yiras Shamayim literally, people will translate it as fear of heaven, fear of God. And it's a fundamental mitzvah to fear Hashem. But the question is, why should you fear Him? He tells us, I'm your father, I love you. I love you more deeply than any other love. What are you scared of? Obviously the answer is that we're scared of His punishment. Or, I don't know, I won't say obviously the answer is, because I'll say the most muskel rishon, how do you say that in English? The answer at first glance is, oh, we're scared that He might punish us if we mess up. That is the most superficial, basic level of Yirat Shamayim. And we discussed that another time. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it now. I just want to stress one thing. I just want to spend just a couple of minutes just putting it into perspective before we move on to what the real essential concept of Yirat Shamayim really means. So first of all, we're told that yes, person does mitzvahs, he gets reward. Person does averus, he gets punished. It sounds to us kind of like Hashem is a judge. That's His approach. Tit for tat. Good is good, bad is bad. Up to you. You earn yourself a spanking, you'll get the spanking. You earn yourself good, you'll get good. Hashem couldn't care less. No skin off His nose. That is certainly not the pshat in Yiras HaOinish either, when we talk about fear of Hashem's punishment. We have to understand that there is really just one factor in Hashem's relationship with us, which branches into numerous factors, which includes also the punishment aspect. But really it's all love. Or we might say, chesed. Chesed and din, people make the mistake of thinking that chesed and din are the two sides of the scale. And that isn't true. The Ramchal makes it very clear that the umbrella midah is called chesed. Under chesed there is a scale. There's rachamim and din. You know what that is? A mother in a relationship with her child. The relationship is love, right? You won't say, well, there's love and there's anger, right? Depends if the kid misbehaves. The entire relationship, with all of its facets, are love. Now, within that love, sometimes there will be gentle treatment, sometimes there will be rough treatment, right? So that's, rachamim and din are both ways of making the love work right. Mamish, when a mother holds her child down so the doctor can stick in the shot, that's all part of the mother's love. And when a mother, well, I don't know if it's a good idea today, but when it was, when a mother gives a spanking, that's also part of her love. It should be, by the way. If it's just frustration, don't do it. Even if you still do believe in doing it today. If it's just frustration, don't do it. Wait till you're not frustrated anymore. Wait till you really just feel that you're doing it only because you care for the kid's development. whatever it is, the point that we're making is clear. The discipline and the prizes are all part of the love. That's how it works with Hashem also. Even the punishment in Gehenna. Now, punishment in this world, that's obvious. That's easier to explain, because punishments in this world, the entire purpose of punishments in this world is to wake us up, to get us back onto the right track. That's what the punishments in this world are all about.
What's a punishment?
What's that?
What is a punishment?
A holocaust. Achmana Litzlan. A holocaust is for people to learn the lesson that Jews will never succeed in living as goyim. They tried in Europe, it didn't work. The Holocaust directly reflected the decline of spirituality in Europe. Now, this does not conflict with the fact that when the Holocaust happened, it destroyed many very great people too. Because that's the way Hashem works. Once there's a gzeira, it's going to affect the righteous too. But Rabbi Avigdor Miller always used to say, I wouldn't have the guts to say this. Rabbi Avigdor Miller always used to say about the Holocaust or about other such events, we don't understand Hashem's ways, is a from formula of apikorsis. That's how he put it, unabashedly. We do know Hashem's ways. Hashem makes it clear what his ways are. We might not understand the full extent of it, but anybody who knows a little bit of what was going on in Europe knew that spirituality was on the decline and it was getting more and more and more rapid. The Gedolim were talking about a Holocaust well before it happened. And then it happened. So there's nothing surprising there. Rahman al-Islam. Then it's an amazing Meshech Chachma. An amazing Meshech Chachma. That was printed well before the Holocaust. I think that it was printed in 1919. I'm not sure. Where he says that the pattern in Jewish history always is, always has been, that the Jews are exiled from place to place. They settle into a place. It takes a while, but then they start becoming comfortable, settling in, becoming complacent. They start getting involved with the country, getting deeply entrenched, mixing with the non-Jews, and then the next storm comes and uproots them and plants them somewhere else. And then the process repeats itself, Rachman al-Utslan. And this is the Meshech Chachma talking. The Sefer was printed well before the Holocaust. He says, the latest example that we've seen of this is Berlin, he says. People have come to call, what was the nest of the Reform? Where did irreligious Judaism begin? In Germany. That was where the first irreligious Jew was invented. Well, not the first, but when it turned into a movement, when it turned into a circle. It used to be individuals. So he said, people started calling Berlin Yerushalayim. He said, that's where the next storm is going to come from. That's what Meir Simcha. So, that's the purpose of the troubles in this world, Rahman al-Sana, to wake us up, to keep us on track, because in the eternal picture, it's well worth it. The aspect that's a little more difficult to explain, the Ron already asks this, is how do you explain Gehenna if so? If the whole purpose is... Now, again, what I just said now is mamish, a nutshell, something that's worth expounding on, but I don't want that to be the subject of it. So I want to move quickly. Next world's punishments. That's a little bit deeper, because here, if we say that the purpose of punishments is just to get us back on the right track, if you're saying that the purpose of punishments is to get us back on the right track, once a person is dead, that's not happening anymore. So if the whole purpose of punishments is just for our benefit, why is there such a thing as Gehenna? So the Ran says something very profound. I'll put it into my own words. This is also a fundamental discussion which I mamish want to just present in a nutshell now. We talked about it in the past. Maybe we'll expound on it another time. But in very, very briefly, there's a very famous principle that the reason we're here in this world is because Hashem wants to give us schar. Hashem wants us to have the most precious... Put it this way. Hashem created all kinds of creatures. He's doing chesed to all of them. But on different levels. And Hashem created the creature that He created to be the greatest recipient of the greatest chesed He could possibly give, so to speak, kiviyachol, is the Jew. The Jew is at the top of the ladder, slated to receive kiviyachol everything Hashem could give, which is Olam Haba, what that is, not now. We'll really see when we get there. But I mean, we can also discuss that, but not now. But the neshama, unlike a person, the neshama cannot, is a very refined being, chelek elikamimah, it's a godly being, and cannot enjoy something it didn't earn. People who are of a bit of a level can identify with that. You enjoy something much more than you earned it, and you feel shamed to just receive something you didn't earn. And the neshama, which is made of the most refined material, kibiyachol, that there is, can never really enjoy something that is just given. And therefore it had to earn it. Now, that's why we're in this world. Part of the earning it is going through this world where there's a risk, where you can either make it or break it. Right? You can make it, but you can also mess up. That's what makes the achievement so great. You went through a battle, you went through a danger, you went through something of high stakes, and you made it. And therefore, Gehenim is there. If a person messes up, there's Gehenim. Because without Gehenim, the stakes are not real. If Hashem would just say, oh, it's okay, you make it, not. It's once again a game. And therefore, Gehenim is actually to our benefit. If a person, Chas V'Shalom, goes to Gehenim, he knows, that way the Gehenim really is just a station, it's on the way to Gan Eden. Once he goes through Gehenim, he's able to come to the next, to Gan Eden, and really enjoy it. Because, yes, I have my mess ups, but I paid for them, and now I'm ready to really enjoy what I earned. Without Gehenim, once again, a person who ever did mess up and didn't do tshuva would not be able to enjoy Gan Eden. That is why Gehenim is there. And one more point, and that's going to be the end of this discussion. Another thing we have to realize is another mistake that people make. Just like we said that Chesed and Din are not two sides of the scale, Gan Eden and Gehenim are also not two sides of the scale. The Ramak makes this point in Talmud Devarim. Very profound point. If we were to look at a map, it's not like there's two sides of the scale. Gehenim is a small station on the way. But qualitatively also. The Ramak says, there's a principle, the Gemara puts down a principle, Ein mitzvah mechaba aver. There's no such thing as saying, well, I didn't aver, but I also did a mitzvah, so let one knock out the other. So the Ramak says, why not? Hashem is rachum v'chanun, why not? And the Ramak says, because he's rachum v'chanun, he doesn't do that. Because Gehenim qualitatively is much less than Gan Eden qualitatively. Meaning, the suffering of Gehenim, which is very intense, is much less intense than the joy of Gan Eden. And therefore, if a person were to trade a mitzvah for an avera, tell Hashem, so to speak, skip the Gan Eden, skip that element of Gan Eden, and skip the Gehenim, I'll go straight in and get the rest of my Gan Eden, whatever's the surplus, it's not worth it. It's worth it to go through the Gehenim and not to give up on the tiniest ounce of Gan Eden. Because the smallest measure of a Gan Eden way outweighs qualitatively all the suffering of Gehenim. So that's just in a nutshell. Obviously I moved quickly now. Just in a nutshell, the concept of Yiras HaOinesh, fearing punishment. We have to realize that the consequences are real, the stakes are real, Hashem means business. There's no two ways about it. Mistakes will be punished unless you do tshuva. You have to keep that in mind also. Gehenim is not inevitable. We know that Ein Tzadik Baretz Asher Yaseh Tov Le'echad. Everybody messes up. Doesn't mean you have to go to Gehenim. Fix it up. You can avoid Gehenim. Fix it up. You're given the opportunity. Fine. End of discussion. All this is not really what Yiras Shamayim is. Yiras Shamayim is one of the most praised virtues that a person could possibly have. It's not this. It's not worrying about Gehenim. Gemara says, you have Pesukim talking about it. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Ma Hashem Alekecho Shel Meimachim Liyiro. All Hashem wants is that you should be Yoreh. Now I'm avoiding the word fear, because that's not really what Yoreh means on the deeper level. All Hashem wants is that you should be Yoreh. Gemara says, Ein la kadosh baruch hu ba'alama yelo oitzer shel yiras shamayim bilvad. All Hashem is interested in this world is yiras shamayim. Qehelet says, Saif Dava Kol Nishma Sadekim Yerovetz Mitzvot Sal Shmo Kizek Kol Adam. All of what man is about is Yiras Hashem and doing mitzvahs. Yiras Hashem is it. What about Ava? What about Bitachin? What about all these other things? Why Yira? So here also, we're talking about making mistakes and thinking that things are on two sides of the scale. The thought that Yira and Ava are two sides of the scale is also a mistake. Yira Sa'inish and Ava might be two sides of the scale. But we'll really appreciate what Yira is. We'll see that already at that level, Yira and Ava simply blend together. What is Yira? What's that? Ah. We'll see how that'll figure into the equation. What is Yira? The truth is, really, the fundamental definition of Yira is awareness. Sounds like a chiddush, but it isn't really. Victor Miller, that was one of the biggest yesoidis that he used to hammer in all the time. Yiras Hashem means awareness. Yiras Hashem means awareness, and that is the most important function to be busy with in this world, gaining and intensifying your awareness of Hashem and making it more and more and more and more real. What do we mean by saying that it's awareness? Why is it called Yira if that's the case? So here we really come on to the next part of the discussion, and understanding that Yira really means Yiras Haroimimus. Yiras Haroimimus means awe, as opposed to fear. Right? Yiras Ha'oinesh is fear, fear of punishment. Yiras Haroimimus can translate in English into one word, awe, as opposed to fear. There's a big difference between awe and fear. When you meet a 7-foot Schwarze in Harlem, and you're by yourself, and there's nobody around, you feel fear, you don't feel awe. When you meet the Gadol HaDor of Steinman, I don't know if anybody's seen him recently, tiny, frail, nothing to be scared of. Comes down to it, you can knock him over by blowing, if you need to, right? Arm wrestle, you can cream him. But you feel awe, right? You feel awe to the extent that sometimes you can't even speak. What are you scared of? It's not fear. It's an appreciation of what's in front of you. The awesomeness of the presence of what you're experiencing right now. That's what it is that you're experiencing. That is really what Yiras Hashem is meant to be. Awe. And that's what we call Yiras HaRoimimus. Awe of the greatness. We're not talking about awe of His power, of His might, of the fact that He can clobber you and you don't stand a chance against Him. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about awe of His greatness. When you appreciate how great Hashem is, and the fact that He's interested in you, and you appreciate the unbelievable, infinite difference, distance between you and Hashem, and the fact that He's interested in you, that should inspire awe. Not fear, but awe. Now, fear is a chash of a level. With everything we said before, I don't want to undermine the greatness of fear. We see the Kadmonim make light of it. Psilas Yisharim says, Rambam, year is for women and children, and for the ignorant. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said that at the end of the day, it's a very, very great madriga. When we see the Kadmonim making light of it, what they're telling us is, don't go for billions if you can make trillions. But a person who spends his life fearing Hashem, and he's not going to make a wrong move because of Yiras Ha'Oinesh, he's on a very great madriga. But yet, what we're talking about, the madriga that is being so praised, is awe. And really, what is awe? No such thing as being awed without being properly aware. Once we understand that that's really what it is, it means appreciating what you're talking about. Appreciating what is in front of you. So really, all it is about is deepening your awareness. Meaning, awareness that Hashem is here is one thing. But you have to be aware of who Hashem is, and aware of who you are. And you deepen your understanding of who Hashem is. You deepen it even more, you can start experiencing awe. Now the truth is that when you really learn to appreciate it, Yiras Hashem turns into a thrilling experience. It can give a person's life meaning. It can cure a person of any depression and any other such thing. It can cure a person of how do you say charadot in English? Neuroses, and all the other different types of emotional instabilities that people suffer today, can all be cured through real Yira Shamayim. Yira Shamayim as an awe. Let me just give an example of a mushroom of what we're talking about. Try to picture. You can think, anybody can think realistically at sometimes an experience that will be the most meaningful, thrilling, exciting experience of his life is an experience that he approaches with his heart pounding, sweating. What do I mean? What I mean is, let's say for example, a person who's been practicing as an actor for weeks and for months and for years, and finally this is his chance. He is going to be starring in his first performance on Broadway in front of 50,000 people. And he's going to be stepping out on the stage for the first time in his life, right into the spotlight, 50,000 people, all of the media is going to be there reporting the event. This person is very nervous, trepidation, he's sweating, he's trembling. Would he forego the experience? Are you kidding? This is what he's been waiting for. This is the peak of his life. And it goes along with a sense of trepidation like he never felt before. If you're going to measure the whatever it is level against the time he was mugged, it's going to be greater now. Right? Time he was mugged, okay, he was scared. Fine, say that. He got over it. But this is going to be greater. And this is an experience he's never going to forget. When we're talking about Yiras HaRoimim, this is what we're talking about. Now, let me ask a question also. When that person is standing up on stage, after all his years of preparation, and he's about to do his part, that he practiced, he has it down, has it polished, he's been working on it. Is that person, at that time, going to feel any sense of depression, dejection, or is he going to feel full of enthusiasm with the trepidation? That's what he's going to feel. Anybody can think about this. After they do it a few times and they see that it's all just, that's when they start with the drugs and this, and they end up dying at 45 or earlier on the overdoses. But this experience, here we're seeing how the most thrilling experience of life comes along with a very, very great trepidation. And the truth is that people have had thrilling experiences of life without it. Person who's been to Disney World, right? Person who's eaten the best restaurants has never experienced the thrill that this person has experienced. We're talking about a thrill of a completely different level. When you learn to appreciate what it means to be dealing with Hashem, to be interacting with Hashem, the significance of what it means that Hashem wants you to do His mitzvah, this is the feeling that you'll feel. Now this isn't an easy feeling to develop. That's why it's called such a great madrega. So Yiras Hashem is such a great madrega. It takes work to develop these feelings. But right now we're just defining the concept itself. What is Yiras Shamayim that is considered such a great virtue? That's what it is. Experiencing the fact that you're standing and performing in front of Hashem. You realize what a mitzvah is? That's the way the Mesiyas Yisharim puts it. The Mesiyas Yisharim has two very fundamental expositions on this. And the way he puts it is, do you know what it means? You're about to put on tefillin. Do you really appreciate what that means? Hashem, think a little bit about who He is. He's not, we've been stressing in the last year on how Hashem is in shul. He's not just someone in shul. Hashem is a very, very busy being, right? He's busy running an entire universe. Earth is a very small part of the picture, right? He's busy running world events. He's busy manipulating what the dynamics between Obama and Netanyahu are going to be next week. And with all that going on, and on top of that, Earth is just a tiny speck in the big picture of things. He has billions of malachim. I don't know what this means, but the Reish Chachma says a malach It's 500 times the size of the universe. I don't know what that means. And qualitatively, the personalities that these malachim are, and he has billions of them, who are saying Shira all the time. And by the way, it says that they appreciate what it means to be standing before Hashem and saying Shira. It says that they're sweating fire the whole time, whatever that means. Saying these things without knowing what it means. Now think about that for a minute. Think about that for a minute. And think that Hashem, who's there at that time, says, but there's one thing I'm more interested in seeing right now. I want to see that person put on tefillin for me. That's what I want to see. You put on tefillin with that feeling, realizing that there are those billions of malachim, and it's all the major world events. And Hashem is interested in one thing more than all that. He's not interested in all the malachim right now. He's more interested in watching. He asks you to put on tefillin, and you're going to do it, and you're going to make him proud. He asks, can you do this for me? And you're about to do that. That's Yiras HaRoimus. To appreciate what exactly you're doing when you're putting on your tefillin. Yosei Al Sishon says, when a person thinks of it this way, you approach any mitzvah with that same trepidation. This is much bigger than performing for 50,000 people on Broadway. Much bigger. That's the year that we're talking about. That's the year that we're talking about. Any mitzvah that you do, we say, Asher Kedishonu b'mitzvah yisov. Mitzvah. What does the word mitzvah mean? So what does mitzvah mean? Commandment. Technical. Hashem commands us to put on tefillin. We command the Filipino to sponge on the floor. And, right? Command. It says, the word mitzvah has much more depth. Sure, on a technical level it can refer to any command, but he says really the word mitzvah is from the word tzav, command, is the same root as the word tzevis. Tzevis means company. Tzevis means company. Tzevis means, right, in Hebrew a staff is called a tzevis. Right? You say you do something b'tzavta, means we'll do it together. It comes from Aramaic, but originally it comes from Hebrew. Tzevis. Tzav, anytime one person commands another, really what he's saying is, I need something from you. I need an association with you. Now when it's the Filipino doing sponja, you don't need her. You need an association with a clean floor. She's a means of getting to the clean floor. But when you realize that Hashem doesn't need your tefillin, he doesn't need your Shabbos, what is it that he's commanding? What he wants is you. Tzav is implying, Hashem is saying, I want a connection with you. I want to be interacting with you. Therefore, I'm giving you this mitzvah to do. Think about that. Before you put it, you're putting on tefillin in the morning, one of the most things you do by rote, you still have to sleep. You rolled out of bed 12 and a half minutes ago. And you're putting on tefillin. Think about that for a minute. Don't read the signs on the wall while you're putting on the tefillin. I'm talking to myself. Don't read the signs on the wall while you're rolling the tefillin around. Take out a minute before you approach the mitzvah and think for a minute. Hashem, Meloich Chol Haaretz Kevoido, who's on top of all this, is interested in me and my tefillin now. He wants to watch me and my tefillin now. He wants to see how I can put tefillin on for him. And when you're putting on those tefillin, you're interacting with Hashem. Think about that. That's Yiras HaRoimus. Now, even as we think about that, we're not necessarily going to feel that trepidation. But that's the beginning step towards Yiras HaRoimus. Starting to, that's really what Yiras HaRoimus is. Appreciating what it means to be interacting with Hashem. To be doing things with Hashem. That appreciating what it means that Hashem is interested in you and that He's focused on you. That's Yiras HaRoimus. That's why, like we said before, the fundamental definition of Yira is awareness. It all boils down to awareness. Just depends how aware you are. Right? For example, I don't really have to explain to you that if there's a lion in the room, you should leave the room. All I have to do is make you aware that there's a lion, right? If I point out to you that there's a lion in the room, you figure you should come back another time, right now go home. Right? But, let's say I point out to you that there's a lion in the room, awareness, different levels of awareness. Well, you don't know what a lion is. Well, you know what a lion is, but you don't know what it can do. Okay, so there's a lion in the room. Well, let's say you know that being with a lion for more than 5 minutes can be an uncomfortable experience. Will you leave the room? Well, it depends how important what you're doing is, right? If you're really in the middle of something, and you, okay, uncomfortable experience. If you really know what a lion is, you're out of there in a jiffy, right? Uncomfortable, you'll get back to what you were doing later. So, what the awareness will mean for you depends on how deep your awareness of it is. So we're talking about Hashem, we're not talking about a lion. Like we said before, Hashem is not looking to hit you over the head. That's the most basic level of Yirat Shamayim. You're scared to do an Avera because you don't want Him to hit you. Hashem's not interested in hitting you. Yirat Shamayim is relevant for a person who's never going to do an Avera in his life. Yirat Shamayim is something that a person should be feeling all the time. When you become aware of Hashem, a sensory awareness of Hashem, and you appreciate who Hashem is, and how small you are in comparison with Hashem. Right? And that itself will automatically engender the feelings. The feeling of trepidation, the feeling of awe, will be an automatic consequence of appreciating who Hashem is, who I am, and what it means that He's interested in me, and what it means that He's watching me. Wonder how small you are? Everybody here came from somewhere in Chutz Lars. Everybody here has been on a plane. Right? How insignificant does any neighborhood come? I always like to think about that when we're starting the approach, and when you start your descent, and you start being able to make out streets and houses, and you can see hundreds of houses at once. I remember thinking to myself, wow, in each of those hundreds of houses, there's all dynamics going on. Right? There's a big drama. Who knows how many dramas going on? A fight between a parent and a kid. But no, what do you mean? 1,000 of them. I see them spread out right in front of me. You see how insignificant any individual is. Kiviyach, right? You realize that Hashem sees much, 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 much more than that in one shot, and yet He zeroes in on you. He's busy running it all. And yet He's zeroing in on you. That's what He's interested in. This is really what Yirat Shamayim is. That's why actually, it's like I said before, when a person really lives with this, when a person really lives with this, that solves all problems of depression. What could be more meaningful than living a life in this way? Now, the Messiah Sisharan says that the beginning level of Yirat Shamayimus is this, what I described. When you're doing a mitzvah, you appreciate that tzav, the fact that by commanding you with the mitzvah, really what Hashem is saying, I'm interested in the connection with you. Do this mitzvah with me. You have that awareness whenever you're doing something, interacting with Hashem. When you daven, you appreciate what it means. What does it mean to daven? Davening. It's not that you're standing there and calling up, trying to get Hashem's attention, and, you know, hoping, maybe if you leave a message on His machine, He'll hear it at some point. When you daven, Hashem turns and focuses on you intently. Intently. The way the Chazon Ish puts it is, when a Jewish person opens his mouth to daven, it's like a beautiful harp playing in the ears of Hashem. Hashem focuses with intensity and love. When we're davening, we're the ones ignoring it. You don't have to ever have to worry about whether Hashem is paying attention. We're the ones who are not paying attention. We're somewhere else. We're oblivious to what's going on while we're davening. We're oblivious to the warmth and the focus and the intense love that Hashem that's enveloping you while you're davening. The attention while you're davening. But the Reish Chochma has an amazing exposition. I'm going to get into the details of it, obviously, showing how what's going on when a person is davening, the connection that he's making with Hashem, mamish corresponds to the most intimate of settings between a person and his wife. It shows a lot of halachas of davening that correspond to a lot of the halachas there. Mamish amazing. That's the first level of Yirat Shamayim. When you're doing things that relate to Hashem, you have that feeling. The next level of Yirat Shamayim is the realization that that's actually going on all the time. Not just when you're doing a mitzvah. Not just when you're davening. The fact that all the time, 24/7, Hashem is intently focused on you, with more interest than all those major world events that he's busy running. With more interest than all the billions of malachim, there are 500 times as immense as the universe. All the time, you're sitting and dreaming as you're standing online in the post office, You just realize that this is an opportunity to interact with Hashem in your mind. In your mind. And more than that, the feeling that when you are standing in the presence, let's say, of God Lador, each person with whatever speaks to him, right? The guy who's on stage, there's 50,000 people watching him. He's going to be very careful not to make a wrong move, not to make a funny face, right? He's not going to do the things that you do when you're in the elevator and the only one in the elevator, or the faces that you make in the mirror, or the poses that you make. You're standing on stage with 50,000 people, you stand there very, very conscious of every move you make. That's the next level of Yiras HaRayim, always having that feeling. Now, this is not meant to be taken in an OCD kind of way, but the feeling that you're always in Hashem's focus. That's why there are many halachas that are meant to impress that on us. For example, halacha that says that a person should never walk with his head up in the air. This is halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Don't walk with a koimah's kufa. Walk with your head up in the air, with the arrogant air. Always aware of the immense presence that's watching you, you walk humbly. Right? The halacha that says that when you're dressing or undressing, do so under the blanket. What's the point of all these things? The point is to help us internalize the fact that you're always under that intense focus. This is a lifetime career. This is a lifetime career of developing that awareness. To utilize every opportunity you have to develop that awareness, the sensory awareness. And this is not just nice concepts. This is the mitzvah saseh of Yiras Hashem, the chiyuv of Yiras Hashem. And this is really, in a nutshell, what all of our avodas Hashem is meant to boil down to. All of our avodas Hashem is meant to stem from this Yiras Shamayim, this Yiras Hashem. We'll take it a step further. Ekev anava Yiras Hashem. What is anava? Another very not well understood concept. It says Ekev anava Yiras Hashem. The heel of anava is Yiras Hashem. Meaning anava is something that sprouts out of Yiras Hashem that we've just been discussing. What is anava? Anava is humility. What is humility? I don't think I'm anything. That's not what anava is. If just thinking that you're nothing was anava, the Chovas Halvavos says, we would have, and we know that anava is one of the most value midas, right? So, the Chovas Halvavos says, Chovas Moshe was the greatest anava of all men. I'm putting it into my words. The Chovas Halvavos says, there are greater anava, they're just not men. Look at a 10-year-old boy leading an ox. Ah, what anava. The ox is so powerful that he can smash the kid like nothing. But he doesn't think he's anything. So he allows the 10-year-old boy to lead him. That's really what's going on. The ox doesn't even conceive that maybe he can change things. He allows the 10-year-old boy to lead him. That's another. He thinks he's nothing. There you go. Every ox is on a very high madrega. That's not the another we're talking about. Really thinking that you're nothing. Another dafka comes after realizing quite what the value of a human is. What another really is? We'll give a mashal of what another is. Moshe Rabbeinu knew his value. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the difference between him and other people. It wasn't the person who kidded himself. The biggest another knew who they were exactly. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, for example. Right? He was known for his unbelievable humility. He had no problem saying when he needed to am de God Lador. There were a few incidents in which he asserted that very clearly. There was one time an incident where somebody was killed in a terrorist attack here in Eretz Yisrael, Rachman al-Islam. Someone from Chutz La'aretz, storing here in Eretz Yisrael. Don't catch me on the halachas, I don't know these halachas, but apparently there's a halacha that a person killed in Eretz Yisrael has to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. You can't take the body to Chutz La'aretz. I don't know. But the family was insisting on bringing the body to Chutz La'aretz. And Shlomo Zalman was involved. Mamish against the halacha. Zayin Ames. Halacha was that this person has to be buried here. So finally, Shlomo Zalman was trying to dissuade them. And finally he told them, do you know who I am? I'm Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And if I give the word, no Chevra Kadisha anywhere in the world will bury this person. So cooperate with me. That's Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, person known as one of the most humble people in the last few decades. There were other such incidents. He once told a person who needed to go into a mental institution, he's giving people a hard time, he told him, his parents bought him to Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman sat down with him and he spoke to him and said, I know you don't really want to go to the place, but I'm the Gadol HaDor. Everybody listens to me, and I'm telling you that you should go. Okay. So the humility is not necessarily a steer. What is Anava then? Anava can be understood in the following mashal, in which here also we see how it all boils down to Yirat Shamayim. Anava is as follows. Imagine two poor people waiting outside the office of a great philanthropist, a millionaire. He's known that if you catch him at the right time and he likes you, he can mamish change you into a rich man. He's done it. Okay? Two poor people are waiting in line. First guy goes in. Mamish, he has nothing to his name. He's destitute. He presents his case. And the rich man magnanimously smiles and he says, $200,000. Now this guy is a trillionaire. Okay? $200,000, just like that, writes out a check, slides it across the desk. Now, while this guy is still there, we're going to call him Pauper A, okay? Because we got Pauper B waiting outside. Pauper A is still sitting there, he calls in Pauper B. Pauper B comes in, okay? Now, Pauper A is not a pauper anymore, right? He's well-to-do at this point. So you know what Pauper A does? Moves over behind the desk, sits down next to the trillionaire, and he says to the guy who now walks in, oh, so you're a pauper. Okay, present your case to the two of us. Ridiculous, isn't it? If you want to talk that way, at least do it outside the office. To do it right in front of the trillionaire who just gave you $200,000 is nuts. Right? That's what Anava is. That's what Anava is. Anava is, sure, I might know a lot more than him, but I'm going to relate to that at all when I'm in front of Hashem. That's exactly what it is. When you are keenly aware of the fact that Hashem is watching you and is also in on your thoughts, you're embarrassed to even think that you're greater than the other guy. Because you're standing in front of the trillionaire who just gave it to you. You're embarrassed to even think that way. Because he's there in your thoughts also. Anova is Yiras Shamayim. Ekev Anova Yiras Hashem. That's what Anova is. Anova comes from a very, very deep level of Yiras Shamayim. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Anav of all. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the person who was most keenly aware. Always Mukhan L'Nevua, right? It says, Moshe Rabbeinu can get a Nevua at any given time. Never had to prepare themselves. Nevi'im had to prepare themselves for Nevua. Because you had to be in the right level of meditation, of focusing on just Dvar Hashem in order to be able to receive Nevua. Moshe Rabbeinu was always in that state. He was always in a state of being ready to hear what Hashem is saying. Even when he was talking to other people. That's why he was the greatest son of all. He was more conscious of Hashem's presence than of the other people's presence. This is Yiras HaRoimimus. And therefore, we'll come back now and we'll say, what's going to be another manifestation of Yiras HaRoimimus? You're busy doing a mitzvah. You're worried about what are people going to say. Or what are people going to think? Or any other such things. Or am I making a good impression? Do people see what I'm doing? I want to make sure people see. See, here also. Think of it in those terms. You right now, another example. You right now are busy meeting with somebody who you really want to make a good impression with. Again, let's say a person, the boss of the business, who can give you a great job. And you've put a lot of effort into making a good impression on him because you really want this job. This is going to make all the difference in your life. Okay? And now, outside the window, there are two Puerto Rican drunkards who are sitting on the... You're inside his plush office. And outside, there are two Puerto Rican drunkards who are laughing boisterously. And you know what? They're laughing at you. Now you've been planning your presentation for the interview with this guy for months. Are you going to give any thought to them outside? didn't give any thought to them? Now what happens if it's not two drunken Puerto Ricans, but it's 2 3-year-olds? Right? You are busy with your presentation for the guy who you want to give you a $1 million job. And there are 3-year-olds outside the window looking in and say, look at that funny guy, look how he's talking. Oh, well, I shouldn't talk that way because they're laughing at me. You are single-mindedly focused. You're focused only on them. Well, what happens if it's not 3-year-olds either? There are 2 little germs in the carpet who you know think you're funny. Any attention at all? No attention at all. When a person is living with Yiras Shamayim, with true Yiras Shamayim, he's above everything. He feels confident in life. Nobody can intimidate him. Nobody can make him feel funny. Life is full of meaning. Right? Life is always full of meaning. The smallest things in life have immense meaning. There's no OCD in life. There's no neurosis. Because you always know that you're connected with the greatest of connections. But here, the one thing that we have to do is, to finish this discussion, well, we really didn't even start the discussion, but the one thing we have to do to finish this discussion, the beginning of the discussion, is to stress that in order to do this, this requires a lot of mental practice, mental exercise. This doesn't come naturally, obviously. It takes a lot of thinking. You have to practice and exercise thinking. Thinking about what it means that Hashem is there. Thinking in your mind of who Hashem is. Thinking. Imagine. Imagination. Try to picture these things, these scenes that we were describing, when you're actually ready to do a mitzvah. The billions of malachim. The immensity of the universe. Now the one running all that is busy watching you. Live in a fantasy world. Live in a fantasy world. Fantasizing has its place in Avodas Hashem. It's here. I just want to stress that, because often people tend to relate to imagination as a completely negative thing, and that's a terrible mistake, because growth can only come from utilizing imagination, because the whole concept of Avodas Hashem is being attuned to things that are not tangible and are not here. But just to bring it down to earth in a very, very practical way, to show how sometimes imagination, fantasy, is the real thing. Let's give an example. I have 2 smokers. They're told by the doctor, as I heard a doctor tell a smoker, either you bury the cigarettes or the cigarettes will bury you. Okay? So now, they both go out, and one guy says, come on, the pack of cigarettes is enticing. Worry about these things. Now the other guy sits down and starts picturing himself attached to all kinds of pipes, and he's really picturing it in his mind. He's picturing registering in the hospital. He's picturing, imagining all this in his mind. He's imagining in his mind where the doctor sits him down with his wife Rachmana Litzlan and tells him, I have bad news for you. He's imagining in his mind, Rachmana Litzlan, I'm getting a little stark here. He's imagining in his mind moving into the hospice, part of the hospital. And the other guy is not. Who's living in an imaginary world and who's living in a real world? The guy who's busy fantasizing is living in a real world. He's connected with reality. The guy who says, come on, there's the here and there's the now. Don't bother me with all these things. He's living in an imaginary world. Why? Because there are very, very real things ahead that he is simply pushing under the rug. They don't exist. He's living in a fantasy world, that life is going to continue exactly the way it is now. Sometimes you have to fantasize in order to connect to reality. This is a fundamental yisoid in Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem, you have to be able to picture. Now, that's a bad example for connecting it to Avodas Hashem, because those are not the things you should be picturing in Avodas Hashem. When people are on a certain level, they say that the Beis Halevi, after Abdullah each week, I'm saying this in order to tell you what not to do. Beis Halevi, after Abdullah each week, would stick his hand into the Abdullah candle in order to remind himself of what Gehenna might feel like. That's how he would start his week. Not for us, Rabbi Yisrael. Not for us. We shouldn't be, those are not the things we need to be picturing all the time ahead of us. People who are on the right level and who are aware enough of the true meaning of life, picture on that. We should be busy fantasizing the scenes that we were discussing before. Busy really imagining, trying to conjure in our minds the presence of Hashem. Try to imagine it. Use a little imagination. Yossi Sharm advises that, by the way. So before going into a mitzvah, don't rush into mitzvahs. Don't put on tefillin right away. Stop for a minute. Take a half a minute. Half a minute is a long enough time in order to get this going. Half a minute to try to start picturing what's actually going on. Try to picture the presence of Hashem. Try to picture Hashem's happiness at seeing you coming into shul. Try to picture Hashem watching intently and proudly as you're putting on the tefillin for Him. Mamish the same way, don't get insulted, but mamish the same way, the parent watches all excitedly and happily when the 3-year-old shows off some chachmah. That's how Hashem is watching you. Can make the right proportions. Use your imagination in order to try to picture these things. This is the road to really Yirat Shamayim, which is really the road to enjoying this world, to turning everything in life into true meaning, and ultimately reaching the greatest places in the next world too. That's for tonight.